Support for State Week comes from the following sponsors: the Illinois Education Association, Visit Springfield, and PyOrg.
From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, it's the summer, often a bit of downtime for government in Illinois, but not with elections looming, and a big one is coming up next spring, the race to be the mayor of Chicago. We'll talk about who's in as petitions are now beginning to circulate. And the former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan makes another attempt to overturn his corruption conviction. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Heather Sharone, a reporter for WTTW and Chicago Tonight. Heather, thanks for being here with us this week.
I'm glad to be back.
So let me start with you. You're covering Chicago. You're following the politics and the government there and what's going on. Some familiar names are trying to make a bid for the mayor's office. Who are some of those, especially for those of us who aren't in Chicago and maybe have not heard the list, who are some of those that we know are in?
The big names that have already announced bids for mayor are Susana Mendoza, the Illinois comptroller and former Chicago city clerk, Congressman Mike Quigley. But the bigger questions, at least right now, are about who hasn't quite said what they plan to do. Mayor Brandon Johnson said again this week that he hadn't decided whether to run for a second term, although he has authorized his sort of political supporters to start collecting those nominating petitions on his behalf. And everybody's waiting to see what Alexei Janulis, the Secretary of State, will do. He is also running for re-election as Secretary of State in November. And so the big question is whether he is going to toss his hat into the proverbial ring for a new position, even as he seeks another term as one of the state's constitutional officers.
Yeah, and Janulis, he would come out as probably one of the front runners, at least, mainly due to some name ID. Secretary of State's always a high profile position, but also he has raised quite a bit of money. I think well over $20 million so far, according to the latest campaign filings.
That's right. He does not have sort of a well-known opponent in the Secretary of State's race. Despite that, he has been running ads throughout the Chicago market about his work as Secretary of State, which has made a lot of people speculate that he is sort of using that campaign war chest already to sort of lay down a marker in the Chicago mayor's race. If he does get into the race and if Mayor Johnson does run for re-election, Janulis will have a massive financial advantage over him. The mayor has not made fundraising a priority, and that's reflected in his latest reports to the Illinois State Board of Elections. But it is very early. The election does not take place until February 2027. And assuming that nobody gets more than 50% of the vote, the top two vote getters will go to a runoff in April. So I like to think of Chicago elections as marathons and not sprints. And we are at the very beginning.
For those of us who follow Chicago politics more from a distance, you know, what I have heard about Mayor Johnson has been low approval ratings. We've heard that almost now for 2-3 years, almost since he got into office soon after that. So that would be an obstacle for him, certainly, if his approval ratings still are low. But does it necessarily, I mean, he's still the incumbent and he's had the support of teachers unions in the past, the teachers union there. Can you really write him off at this point?
I don't think you can write anyone off, much less an incumbent mayor of Chicago. What's interesting about how the field has shaped up so far is that the only progressive person sort of publicly weighing a race for mayor is the mayor. You know, sometimes Chicago elections sort of break down into sometimes what I like to think about lanes. Sometimes those lanes are decided by race. Sometimes those lanes are divided by people who have held elected office before and are well known, and those who are not. And sometimes it is divided by ideology. And right now, if Janulius gets into the race, he would be one of a number of candidates who are from sort of the more centrist or the more moderate wing of the Chicago / Illinois Democratic Party. That includes Susana Mendoza, although she is, I think, on, you know, the very center of the party, if not a little bit towards the right of the party. And the rest of the candidates are sort of not seeking to capitalize on, you know, the progressive movement that swept Johnson into office or to offer progressive Chicago voters an alternative. The big question for Johnson is he the only sort of well-known progressive that gets into the race? And what happens with the other announced Black candidates? Matthew Brewer, who is the chairman of the CHA board, the Chicago Housing Authority board, who has clashed very publicly with the mayor, is running. He's Black, but he is not somebody who's sort of well-known in progressive communities, and he's somebody who has a long history with sort of Chicago's business and finance community. Another wild card is the now perennial candidacy of Willie Wilson. He has sort of already begun sort of raising money for a mayoral campaign that he hasn't said whether he will pursue. If he does run, this would be his third bid for the office. In his previous two races, he got just about more than 10% of the vote the first time around. The second time around, he got about 9% of the vote. But he is a very conservative person. And I think you sort of want to have your lane to yourself, if possible. So the first round of voting may be sort of a battle royale between the more centrist or moderate candidates. And perhaps that will allow Johnson to get into a runoff. That, I think, is how his political campaign sees him winning a second term.
Yeah, Charlie, it's a lot different. You know, I think back to the old Mayor Daley, the first Mayor Daley, and I think how powerful he was, how much he controlled. I mean, it's not the same anymore. And in almost the minute some of these people, Rahm Emanuel, Lori Lightfoot, almost the minute these folks have gotten into office, the opposition really starts to tear them down and their approval ratings start to slide and they become much more vulnerable. So being the incumbent is not what it used to be.
Oh, no, not at all. And if I'm not mistaken, when Lori Lightfoot was didn't even make the final runoff and was not reelected, I think that was the first time in 40-some years or more that an incumbent Chicago mayor running for reelection was rejected. One of the things that struck me in reading the preview stories was how much money Janulius has. For example, one of the stories pointed out that Janulius has $22 million on hand, which is about three times the combined cash on hand of everyone else who's either considering or has announced that they're going to run. And he took in almost $116,000 in bank interest from his campaign in the last quarter. That's more than any of the others, or the, including Johnson, got in donor contributions. So he's sitting on this pile of money. It will enable him to do several things. One is he'll be able to challenge the petitions of that are going to be filed by other people. And that's a standard practice, Heather. I'm sure you recall when candidates file petitions, I think it's what, it's like 25,000 signatures you need?
12,500, actually.
Yeah, and what they shoot for is three or four times that because they know they're going to be challenged. And Janulius has money to support those challenges. He also has money that he can help promote potential rivals, Willie Wilson maybe, or Brewer, he can promote their candidacies as an offset to Mayor Johnson's chances. So it's really interesting to see. Junilius, I'm expecting that he'll formally announce on Sunday. I don't think he's going to unveil some new license plate or something like that. I'm guessing that he'll announce. And we already know that Mendoza is in the race. And I would say, to her credit, she decided, yes, I'm going to run for mayor, so I'm not going to run for another term as comptroller. Whereas in case of Junilius, he's running for Secretary of State. Quigley is running for Congress again. So they're in a situation of, well, if I do win the nomination for mayor, the election isn't until after the fall election for the legislature or for Congress or for state offices. So if I'm Junilius and I get, and if he stays in and runs for re-election, he will, because I don't even think there's any Republican challenger to him. So then what does he do? He's been nominated for mayor, so he's in Congress for a couple of months and resigns. I mean, that's a decision those guys are going to have to make. So at this point, though, I would say, in terms of the mayoral, if you were going to be betting on it, I would bet on Junilius certainly making the runoff, if there is a runoff.
And Heather, before we leave this topic, I'll let you have the last word. I guess, what should people be watching for, not just right now, not just with these announcements, but over the next several months when it comes to these campaigns?
Well, you definitely want to keep an eye on money, because money is important. But just like I think that being the incumbent mayor of Chicago doesn't mean as much as it used to, I think money doesn't mean as much as it used to, because if it did, it would be Democratic Senate nominee Raja Krishnamoorthy. And we all know that Juliana Stratton won a convincing victory in that race just a couple of months ago. I would also keep a look at the mayor's relationship with the city council. It's never easy to pass a budget in an election year. It is going to be especially difficult this year because the city council does not trust the mayor to tell them the truth. And the mayor has repeatedly said that he believes the majority of the council is doing the bidding of large corporations rather than the people of Chicago. So the fight over the city's 2027 budget is going to be a political Donnybrook and will have intense ramifications in the election.
All right. Well, we'll be back with more on State Week.
Support for State Week comes from the members of the Illinois Education Association. Serving 135,000 members of educators and support professionals around Illinois. IEA's mission is to promote excellence and equity in public education. When schools and communities unite, we all win. Resources and membership information at ieanea.org.
We're back on State Week along with Charlie Wheeler and Heather Sharon of WTTW in Chicago tonight. I'm Sean Crawford. Charlie, former Speaker Michael Madigan, is serving a prison term in a West Virginia federal prison for his corruption conviction. But he has fought that conviction even after it happened, continued to try to go through the legal channels, and maybe his last one is to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. That's exactly what his legal team has done here. Give us your thoughts on this and whether or not Madigan might have a chance to have this overturned.
It comes as no surprise that he would appeal after the district court upheld his conviction. I think it was in February that the federal appeals court in Chicago upheld his conviction. And the appellate court said, and this is a quote, "Evidence exposed a sustained and concealed arrangement to exchange enormous political influence within the Illinois General Assembly for over $3 million in benefits for political allies." Now, what the latest filing for Madigan, his lawyers want the U.S. Supreme Court to consider whether his acts are corrupt or are they kind of standard political wheeling and dealing. And whether a promise to make a job recommendation qualifies as an official act. And lawyers in the filing, and here's a quote, "The novel bribery theories the government zealously pursued against Speaker Madigan stretch federal bribery law in ways that threaten to criminalize and chill lawful interactions between state and local officials and their constituents." So that's their point, that what Madigan was doing was just part of being a legislator, and that the Justice Department went out of its way to convict him. And whether or not it'll succeed, you never know. But a couple of years ago, in a separate case, the Supreme Court debated the meaning of the word corruptly. They never defined it. And they also said that there has to be an arrangement up front. It can't be after the fact. So I guess that's his hope. And I guess if he loses at the Supreme Court, his absolute last resort is to ask for a pardon from President Trump.
Yeah, and Heather, that's one of those things that I don't think most people would have had on their bingo card a few years back. But, you know, here it could be. I mean, Madigan could serve until he's 90 years old or near 90 before he would get out. And, you know, when you get desperate, especially at the end of his life, I don't think he wants to spend the rest of his life in prison. I can see why these actions are being taken.
Yes, and I think that, you know, many people's eyes sort of widened and their eyebrows raised a few months ago when Madigan wrote an op-ed of urging Governor Pritzker to accept the federal scholarship money the Trump administration included in the last federal budget, which would essentially provide scholarships for private school and parochial school students. That has been a huge priority of the president, and many people read that as a way for an attempt by Madigan to curry favor with the president. So obviously, it is a fool's errand to try to predict what President Trump is going to do on any given day, so I will not attempt that. But I think that a lot of the pardons we've seen the president issue have some sort of direct connection to either an industry that he is focused on or people that he knows. I am not convinced that they're with the president to pardon Madigan, and that has been a consistent tale of the president's pardons, that it has benefited him in some way.
You're listening to State Week.
Support for State Week comes from PIORG, a nonprofit consulting firm providing resources for strategic planning, best practice implementation, and outcomes-focused program evaluation across the country, helping organizations make data understandable and actionable, enabling change makers to strengthen critical skills and serve others more effectively. PI, Plan, Implement, Evaluate. Services and information at PIORG.org.
Back on State Week, Charlie, we're talking about President Trump, and his Department of Justice sent a letter recently to the State Board of Elections, actually not just Illinois, but several others, threatening prosecution of election officials for allowing non-citizens to be registered to vote. Now, the Board of Elections here in Illinois has now responded to that. They say basically they do follow the rules. It's not a big problem. But what's your take on this? Some people see this as trying to intimidate.
Yeah, I think that's clearly what the president wants to do. And this is obviously my own opinion, but I think he looks at the polls. He looks at the fact that there's a lot of dissatisfaction among the electorate with the way things are going, the war in Iran, its effect on prices and supplies. And so in my mind, that's what this is part of an effort to get election authorities in the states to supply lists of voters, registered voters, that will form a national database that Trump and his allies can use to try and influence the elections. He repeats these disproven claims of widespread voter fraud. I would say he flat out lies about it. He lost to Biden. The fact that he doesn't recognize it doesn't make it any different. Some of the stuff he's asking for is protected by our privacy laws. And the Board of Elections sent a letter. They'd responded earlier that, no, we're not going to do it because Illinois law always is all cover this stuff. In the letter, they said, the board and Illinois election authorities take very seriously their responsibility to maintain up-to-date and accurate voter registration records while ensuring that no eligible voters are disenfranchised by being mistakenly removed from the rolls. Illinois' comprehensive list maintenance framework, consistent with the National Voter Registration Act, ensures fair and free elections. So the reply was, what would you say, it's very formal, and it's saying, here's what we do. We conduct our elections according to the law, and we don't want to have to share this private information, things like Social Security numbers, with the federal government. Illinois is not the only state that's facing this. As you mentioned, dozens of other states have been sued also seeking access to the complete unredacted databases, including personal information, dates of birth, Social Security numbers, driver's license numbers, and so on. As of earlier this week, federal judges, according to the reporting, in 17 district courts and one appellate court had ruled against the administration, finding the Department of Justice does not have statutory authority to demand such records. No court has yet ruled in the Department of Justice's favor on the issue. As you know, the State Board of Elections does not maintain the voter rolls. They're done independently by election authorities in the 102 counties and several individual election commissions, as in Chicago. And so there's really no one place where everything is gathered.
Now, Heather, this seems, when it comes to Trump and his administration, it's same old, same old. We've been hearing this now for many years. A lot of people like to point out that, of course, he talks about the election he lost, but he was, his administration was in charge at the federal level during that time. So, and of course, when Biden was in 2024, Republicans end up taking all control of Congress and the executive branch. So everybody wants to see elections secure. But this seems maybe like this is some smoke.
Yes, there's no doubt that the president has done his best to raise questions about the security and safety of our elections without offering any evidence whatsoever. He gave a major primetime address just a couple of weeks ago that somehow implied that China was involved in sort of manipulating vote totals. There is no evidence of that. The Trump administration also released a bunch of documents that they said proved that there had been sort of misconduct in the 2020 election. Those documents proved nothing of the sort. But this is part of a repeated pattern that we have seen, that the president only accepts the results of elections that he wins. That has raised a significant amount of anxiety over what will happen in November, where if the polling is correct, the Democrats are likely to take control of the House and may have a shot at taking control of the Senate.
Just a few seconds left here, Heather. Real quick, you had a story about the interim police superintendent in Chicago. I thought we could share that real fast. What did you find out?
Well, I found out that interim superintendent Fred Waller is earning both a salary of about about $210,000 annually, and a taxpayer-funded pension of about $140,000 a year. Now, there's nothing illegal about that. Waller worked for CPD for 34 years before he retired in 2020. He came back in 2023 as the interim superintendent before Larry Snelling became the permanent leader of CPD. And he is now once again the interim superintendent now that Larry Snelling has retired. It is an eye-popping amount of money for any public servant to be earning. His total compensation annually is somewhere in the neighborhood of $352,000, significantly more than the mayor makes.
Time now for our notes from the field. Charlie, we'll go to you first.
Well, the governor has signed legislation to declare July 25th as Emmett Till Day in Illinois. Till, you may recall, was a 14-year-old kid from Chicago who was visiting family in Mississippi in 1955. He was kidnapped, beaten, brutally lynched by two white men who said that he whistled at a white female store clerk. The men accused of murdering Till were acquitted by an all-white, all-male jury, although they later confessed to journalists the details of their crime. Till's mother, Mamie Till Mabley, held a public open casket funeral for her son, exposing his severely mutilated body, intended to serve as a catalyst for the American Civil Rights Movement. And the legislation that he signed, Pritzker signed it at the Roberts Temple Church of God in Christ in Bronzeville, the site of Till's funeral.
Well, let's move on. Heather, your note from the field.
Well, this week I asked Mayor Brandon Johnson about a report from the city's inspector general that found that the city transparently and appropriately spent nearly $270 million in Chicago taxpayer money to care for the tens of thousands of migrants that made their way to Chicago between 2022 and 2024. That was the source of much controversy, with a lot of questions about whether the city had followed its own contracting and procurement rules. I was interested to know whether the mayor hoped that the inspector general's sort of mark of approval would prompt Chicagoans to reevaluate how he handled that crisis and how the city handled it. He said that he hoped that people would, but acknowledged that it was upsetting for many Black Chicagoans to watch the city sort of mobilize and spend hundreds of millions of dollars to help sort of the newest Chicagoans when they had been living in neighborhoods that had suffered from disinvestment. And he acknowledged that his decision to sort of do whatever it took to care for the migrants cost him politically in Black Chicago. And he grew quite emotional talking about it. Which is, you know, unusual for the mayor, unusual for any Chicago mayor, really. And I think is an indication of how deeply the crisis sort of affected him politically and personally. He did tell me that he has no regrets, that he believes that he lived his values and responded as his deep Christian faith required him to.
Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. And our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Heather Sharon with WTTW and Chicago Tonight. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.
Support for State Week comes from Visit Springfield, featuring dozens of attractions and overnights on Route 66 in the capital city. Springfield is home to numerous Lincoln sites, Frank Lloyd Wright's Dana Thomas House, the Illinois State Capitol, and more. The Visit Springfield team can help organizers plan their event in the capital city. Attractions and tourism information at visitspringfieldillinois.com.